I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, three people-powered initiatives take effect today. Plus, Governor Jay Inslee's taking his climate grift to the very end. And
MAGA flag? How about a Trump flag or an Antifa flag? We're not going there, folks.
The mayor of one local city explains why they are refusing to raise the pride flag above City Hall. That and more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com.
Here in Normandy, the rescue began. Here, the Allies stood and fought against tyranny in a giant undertaking unparalleled in human history. We stand on a lonely, windswept point on the northern shore of France. The air is soft, but 40 years ago at this moment, the air was dense with smoke and the cries of men, and the air was filled with the crack of rifle fire and the roar of cannon. At dawn on the morning of the 6th of June, 1944, 225 Rangers jumped off the British landing craft and ran to the bottom of these cliffs. Their mission was one of the most difficult and daring of the invasion, to climb these sheer and desolate cliffs and take out the enemy guns. The Allies had been told that some of the mightiest of these guns were here, and they would be trained on the beaches to stop the Allied advance. The Rangers looked up and saw the enemy soldiers, the edge of the cliffs, shooting down at them with machine guns and throwing grenades. And the American Rangers began to climb. They shot rope ladders over the face of these cliffs and began to pull themselves up. When one Ranger fell, another would take his place. When one rope was cut, a Ranger would grab another and begin his climb again. They climbed, shot back, and held their footing. Soon, one by one, the Rangers pulled themselves over the top, and in seizing the firm land at the top of these cliffs, they began to seize back the continent of Europe. 225 came here. After 2 days of fighting, only 90 could still bear arms. And behind me is a memorial that symbolizes the Ranger daggers that were thrust into the top of these cliffs. And before me are the men who put them there. These are the boys of Puente Hope. These are the men who took the cliffs. These are the champions who helped free a continent. And these are the heroes who helped end a war.
I'm Brandi Cruz. Welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. Very little I could say about D-Day that would hold a candle to what President Reagan said there. We thought that would be a fitting way to start the show. And also, as I was listening to his words from the 40-year anniversary of D-Day, now we're at 80 years, I couldn't help but think both from the standpoint of a politician and also reflecting on what those men did on the beach that day, that if we had an ounce of the bravery, the integrity, the patriotism, the selflessness that those men showed that day, and truly that Reagan showed himself as a president, I think that we'd be in a much better place as a nation, as a world, certainly as a state. So while it pales in comparison to what those heroes did on D-Day in fighting really for the survival of not only our country, but our allies and for the world, there is certainly fights happening here in our own backyard to try to protect our democracy and try to do what's right. Today marks a huge day for the state of Washington and for people who have watched one political party erode our quality of life, erode our sense of safety for far too long. Three Let's Go Washington initiatives that were signed each by more than 400,000 voters of this state are law today. They became law at midnight, and some of them, I think, will have a substantial impact on our day-to-day lives. First and foremost, the Police Pursuit Initiative. Back in 2021, when there was this race and social justice awakening, there was a successful effort in Olympia to erode the ability of police to keep us safe, to make it nearly impossible for police to pursue criminals. And we've seen the results of that, the lack of law and order on our streets. As Thurston County Sheriff Derek Standards put it, the days of running because the law says you can are over. If you're thinking about fleeing here, make sure the unit behind you doesn't say sheriff on the side of that. I love that. He says deputies will be authorized to pursue for any violation of law and will no longer need supervisory permission to conduct pit maneuvers at any speed so long as considerations are made for the risk to the public and the Graham v. Connor use of force factors are satisfied. Deputies will be encouraged to pit early and often to comply with state law, which requires the pursuit to be ended as soon as practically possible. That from Thurston County Sheriff Derek Standards. I love that. The days of running because the law says you can are over. And that really has been what this is. You know, there has been this real denial, I think, from Democrats who supported this no police pursuit policy to acknowledge that criminals knew about it. You know, they were calling 911 saying, hey, don't pursue me. This is an unlawful pursuit. That it emboldened criminals, that it hurt the law abiding, and that allowing people to flee from traffic stops wasn't just about, oh, this is like teens on a joyride, which Democrats would have you believe. No, these were stolen vehicles that would be used to commit other crimes, sometimes violent crimes. And I think, you know, in this whole debate, it's been painted as this black and white issue. You know, Democrats said they did this because police pursuits are dangerous. Police pursuits are dangerous. No one who supported restoring reasonable police pursuits has ever said, you will not be able to find me one example of them saying that police pursuits are safe. No, police pursuits can be dangerous, but they're necessary in order to maintain law and order. They're necessary in order to maintain the rule of law. And so they will continue in jurisdictions that allow this initiative to, you know, go back on some of the policies that were put in place in 2021. Now, there are jurisdictions who will absolutely stick to the pursuit policy as it has been for a couple years. Seattle, Bellevue, for instance. So there are a couple agencies who there's no difference today from yesterday. However, there are some agencies who say, let's go. Hands off our law enforcement officers so they can enforce the law. One of those agencies is Pierce County. We spoke earlier this morning with Sergeant Darren Moss of the Pierce County Sheriff's Office, who explained to us what the difference is there between yesterday and today, now that that initiative is law. Sergeant Darren Moss, welcome to Undivided.
Thank you for having me on, Brandy.
Are you as relieved today as I am?
Yes. We put our new policy in place at midnight last night, and we already had 3 pursuits last night, and we had another car take off from us this morning, and the deputy decided not to pursue. But our deputies are ready. They've been waiting for this. I'm sure not just us, but our community is very thankful as well.
Yeah. How long do you think it'll take before the criminals start to realize, like, oh, we can't just flee anymore?
It's going to be a transitional period. The big thing is going to be how many of these guys do we catch and how many of them are going to get time, because that's going to be the trigger that goes, okay, it really wasn't worth it because now I got a year instead of I thought I would just get off with it. Pulling over, you still might get time, but you're not going to get any time for the eluding, which is another felony on your record. So I'd give it maybe a year for some of these guys to catch up. You know, when you give them an ollie-ollie oxen-free, it only takes 2 weeks for them to get used to that. But when we tell them to start behaving again, some of them are just going to have to learn the hard way.
Yeah. And I get the sense sometimes that a lot of these pursuits or vehicles, you know, stolen vehicles that flee are the same people sometimes. Have you seen that, especially with, you know, youth?
Yeah, definitely. Okay. And one of the tragic things I'd say from this perspective is, or from this experiment, is that it was in order to lower the number of pursuits, but we saw a dramatic rise in violent crime, the burglaries, stolen vehicles. We also saw a rise in crime being committed by juveniles. And it's not just like they're stealing stuff or stealing cars. They were doing burglaries with those cars, breaking into businesses. And then on top of that, the courts stopped, you know, putting them in jail and letting them go home. But what happened with that? You just continue to not discipline. And all those juveniles started to get arrested for shootings and stabbings and homicides. So eventually those crime stats started going down on the stolen vehicles because they were committing the majority of all these crimes, We have one kid from another jurisdiction. We got bulletins on him. He was responsible for at least 21 that they could prove.
Wow.
21 stolen vehicles. He's been arrested now. That's going to cut our numbers way, way down. But that kid's life has now been ultimately ruined because he's got all these charges that we let pent up because he wasn't being held responsible. That's one of the hardest things for me, seeing our youth being affected negatively. If you put somebody in a home with no discipline and they have bad behavior, you know, well, you shouldn't have put them in a home when there was no discipline.
Yeah, and I know you work for a sheriff that lets you speak freely, so speak as freely as you're willing to speak on this. One of my key frustrations throughout all of this, and you called it an experiment, and I think that's a very apt term. One of my frustrations has been, you alluded to it, the lack of willingness to acknowledge the implications of letting people flee from law enforcement. You know, there was this hyper-focus on the very rare instances where a pursuit ends in a loss of life. But they would never acknowledge what people were fleeing to do, you know, what they were using stolen cars to go do. You talked about some of the really serious crimes that result from that. So can you just articulate that a little bit from a law enforcement perspective? How frustrating it was to have politicians just deny the reality of what this experiment did.
Yeah, I would always comment and say, you know, there's both good and bad consequences. If the goal is to lower law enforcement pursuits, it was a great success. You lowered law enforcement's pursuits, but you have to take accountability for all the negative consequences that go with it. And as a legislator or as the public, we have to decide what the weight and balances of everything adds up to be and if we like it or we don't like it. Obviously, the public didn't like it. They all signed this petition to roll back some of those changes. One of the things that you can easily see in my entire career, I worked in San Diego Police Department for 3 years. I had never, ever, ever heard of a juvenile taking a stolen vehicle and running it through a GameStop or a weed shop to steal video games or a little bit of weed or alcohol from a corner store. And in the last year, we had so many in our region because there was no accountability. That is direct correlation to the laws. I had never seen that in my entire career. And all of a sudden, the juveniles start committing more crime and they start getting even worse and worse. Traffic fatalities, worst they've been ever in the state. Washington Traffic Safety Commission is the one that put out the numbers, not me. Yeah. But our numbers in Pierce County were terrible for the last 3 years, highest we've had in a long time. That's a direct correlation to the reckless driving we see, which we know started during COVID, but got extremely worse after the laws passed. It's not an opinion. This is coming straight from statistics. You can look at the auto theft numbers start to increase after the law passes. My violent crime started going way, way up in 2022. It increased all of 2021 in just the last 4 months of the year. But I was looking at just violent crime was up like 164% for aggravated assaults for the first 3 months of 2022 after we had gone through this law change. And auto theft was up 197% January through March of 2022, right after these laws took effect. Those are the consequences we had. But if they say, well, you guys aren't doing your job, like, we were trying to do our job, and now you've handed us an unwinnable situation, and it just got worse all over.
Yeah. Well, the handcuffs come off, as you said, in Pierce County. They came off at midnight last night. So just quickly describe to people the difference between yesterday and today in Pierce County.
Yeah. So on the 5th, if we had a vehicle that was stolen or if it was a burglary vehicle, a suspect in a burglary, we weren't allowed to chase because it wasn't one of the specific violent felonies or rape or sexual assault type crimes that we were allowed to pursue for. That law has been rolled back. They've got rid of specific crimes we could chase for. It's back to you can chase for any violation of the law, but you also have to make sure that it poses a threat to the safety of others. And I think that's really important that they have that in there. In the past, it could be any violation of the law we could chase, but now it really needs to pose that safety risk to other people. And I think that's great because it does give balance. It puts accountability on the department and on the officers and their supervisors, but it also gives that discretion back to the officers, the deputies, and the patrol supervisors, because ultimately we are putting our faith and trust in the people that we hire to do this job. And I 100% believe they did not trust us to do what we were paid to do, what we got hired to do, why I have to go through a polygraph and an extensive background and a lot of training so that I make sure that I know what the rules are, I'm going to abide by them, and I'm not out there to just, you know, crash vehicles and hurt people. I'm out there trying to prevent and solve crimes. And we know if we don't have the identity of that driver, it makes it extremely hard to solve that crime. If you have a property crime that's going on over and over and over again with the same vehicle, but you're not allowed to chase them, how are we ever going to figure this thing out?
Yeah.
Now we have the ability, when it's safe to do so, at 2 o'clock in the morning, way out in my mountain detachment where there's only 10 houses for 18 square miles, we're going to chase that guy and we're going to figure out who he is.
And I'll tell you what, I would much rather have deputies who are trained making those decisions about what's in the best interest of public safety than a politician in a suit in a marble building in Olympia. So Sergeant Darren Moss with the Pierce County Sheriff's Office, thank you for coming on. Thank you and your department for telling the truth during this whole thing, because you were one of the agencies that was like, no, we're not just gonna sit back and not say anything about this. And our best to the men and women of your sheriff's office as they take the handcuffs off today and get to go out and do their jobs.
All right, thank you very much.
So good for Sergeant Darren Moss. And let me say this, shame on every single politician who allowed that failed experiment to continue for as long as they did. Shame on the politicians who refused to see the truth, who stuck to outdated, inaccurate data, who kept holding up examples of a couple times where police pursuits had gone wrong, blaming the police instead of the criminals that fled in the first place, and use that as a way to justify the continued deterioration of public safety and law and order on our streets. It took Washington voters to fix this. It took more than 400,000 people signing an initiative. It took boots on the ground out there for months on end, explaining to people the importance of doing so, because our elected leaders are too cowardly. We're too cowardly to admit that they were wrong. They would just as soon let people die. That's not hyperbole. They would just as soon let people die than admit that they were wrong. Those are the kind of people who are in power in Olympia. How shameful is that? But today that gets fixed for the law enforcement agencies who want to fix it. And I will say, for some agencies, there might be a good reason to have a more strict police pursuit policy. The city of Seattle, for instance, much different than if you are patrolling an area like Pierce County, where you've got a mountain detachment, where there are roads where you won't see another car for miles. Pursuing a criminal out there is much, much different and much more safe to the public at large than pursuing somebody who decides to flee a Seattle police officer in the heart of downtown Seattle. So there is a difference here. And it is important for law enforcement agencies to be able to decide for themselves what makes sense for our community. And that's what this initiative allowed for. It wasn't saying we're going to have a one-size-fits-all approach, we're making police departments pursue. No. The one-size-fits-all approach is what was passed in 2021, saying we in Olympia, the politicians, we know better than you how to keep the public safe. So there are going to be law enforcement agencies who might make a different decision today. And then there are going to be law enforcement agencies who haven't made a decision yet, which is, I think, even more shocking than agencies who don't change the rules and just continue to not let officers pursue. The Snohomish County Sheriff's Office is one of the agencies who, after all of this buildup, the anticipation of the law changing today, is still thinking about what they're going to do. This is the statement put out on Facebook today, attributed to the new sheriff, Susanna Johnson. Snohomish County residents, earlier this year, in anticipation of the forthcoming changes to Washington state pursuit laws, we assembled a committee with ranks from deputy through captain. Their task was to thoroughly assess our existing police pursuit policy and propose adjustments that align with best practices, promote community safety, and adheres to the new state law. I'm pleased to share that the committee has completed their recommendations, and now, with input from our community advisory committee, the draft of the revised policy is currently in the review process, which includes discussion and planning with agency leaders. Once that's completed, we will implement new training for all deputies to ensure our office is educated and well-prepared for the new policy to take effect. We are committed to keeping our community members informed every step of the way and will share our updated police pursuit policy once it is finalized. How do you not have an updated police pursuit policy ready to go today? I know you just got into office. You don't think Sheriff Adam Fortney, sure as heck, would have taken the handcuffs off his deputies today and said, it's time to pursue criminals. It's time to restore law and order to our streets. But now you have a sheriff who's obviously much more of a politician and puts out a statement full of government word speak. Oh, study, panel, community input, all these things. You've had a long time to decide what you were going to do today with this new law to try to help members of your community and keep them safe. Because Snohomish County isn't immune from the consequences of the no police pursuit policy. They've seen exactly what Pierce County has been seeing. But Pierce County is willing to say, not anymore. But Snohomish County, not only have they not made a decision, they're still pondering. They're still pondering what to do. That's unreal to me. And what makes it even more unreal, well, I guess, you know, to be fair to the new sheriff, I want to be fair to the new sheriff. She had really important things to do today. She had really, really pressing matters to attend to today. And so I want to give her the benefit of the doubt and say the other issues she had to deal with were so critical, I mean, emergency stuff, that maybe she just didn't have time to put together a well-thought-out statement about how they were going to keep the public safe because earlier she had a pride flag raising. So it's hard to blame her, right, Nicole? I mean, you know, she was honored this morning to join mm-hmm. the executive, council members, and the Office of Social Justice for a pride flag raising and resource fair at the county campus. Thank you to all who joined us.
Priorities.
Yeah, priorities. Mm-hmm. Oh, and then this weekend, what is she doing? She's going to be speaking at a pride event where toddlers can walk down a catwalk to sexy music about drugs and drinking and prostitutes. So those are the priorities of the newly elected sheriff in Snohomish County. Not what to do with what has been the most consequential public safety issue of the last 3 years. That back burner, man, we'll make a decision on that later. I got a pride flag to raise. Unfreaking believable. So the other two initiatives that take effect today are the one codifying no state income tax into law and also the parental rights initiative. And what that parental rights initiative does is it codifies that parents are the primary stakeholder in their child's life and the government can't hide things from them. You know, the government needs to be more transparent about what's happening with kids at school, for instance. And it may come as no surprise to you that on the day the Parental Rights Initiative takes effect, remember, ACLU tried to block it, wasn't successful. Even the Democrats voted unanimously in the state Senate to pass the Parental Rights Initiative. So we're thinking, okay, we get past the ACLU challenge to stop it in its tracks. That doesn't work. So it takes effect today. I'm thinking, great day for parents. Unless you have a child in the public school system. Because Superintendent of Public Instruction Chris Rakedahl has no intention of abiding by this new law. No intention in the world. He made that very clear when he put out a statement saying that he believes the new law is flawed and that it flies in the face of student privacy rights. So he waits all this time, as this is being debated in Olympia and all these things, gets past the ACLU challenge. And now he says, I know it takes effect today, but we're not going to follow it in our public school system, essentially. His statement said, some of these records contain personal information and are protected under the Federal Education Rights and Privacy Act and the Health Insurance HIPAA. And as such, cannot be disclosed without the student's consent. I want to be clear, this initiative did not change, reduce, or diminish student privacy rights in Washington State. There is no question that students are best supported when their families are actively involved in their education. But if a student does not feel safe coming out to their family and they turn to a trusted adult at their school for support, they have a right to receive that support without fear of being outed by their school. He said our state's guidance has maintained that in order to protect student privacy and safety, schools should communicate with students who disclose they are transgender or gender expansive. What? about the student's individual needs, preferences, and safety concerns. It is the student's decision when and if their gender identity is shared and with whom. So this entire statement is about gender identity of students. And that, frankly, has been one of the fundamental concerns from parents who don't want the state hiding information from them, who don't want the school hiding information from them. It has to do with kids who are one kid at home, using their birth name and their birth gender, and then they go to school and they use a different name that the teachers call them, that the staff call them, that students call them. They say they're a different gender. And they live essentially two separate lives, have mental health issues as a result of it, and the school feels like it's appropriate to hide that from parents, as if parents can't possibly be trusted with that information, or as if parents don't deserve to know that their child is having a serious identity crisis. And one of the reasons we push for the Parental Rights Initiative, and, you know, Chris Reichdahl acts like, oh, we can't out students to their parents if they're transgender. We're not going to do that. But we know what the policies at OSPI around that issue, they say that's protected health information. How is believing you're a different gender than the one you were born in protected health information? You're talking about like a kid who maybe has gone through no medical intervention. They show up at school and say, it's a girl. I'm a boy and I want to be called Tommy. And you're telling me that's protected by HIPAA from a parent? Like, no, thank you. No, it's not. And we know what those policies have resulted in. Secretive relationships between teachers and staff and minor children. We reported exclusively about a year ago on the most egregious example of that that we've seen. That was a teacher in the Olympia School District who entered into a secret communication relationship with a child because the child felt they were transgender. And the teacher urged the child, make sure this email's deleted so when we're done talking, otherwise when your mom looks, you'll be outed instantly. Offered to the kid, I would take you into my own home anytime you need. Started harassing, emailing the kid over and over when the kid didn't respond. I kept emailing you. I was worried your mom interfered before you saw my messages. So here you have just one example that we found out about, of a teacher who abuses those policies to engage in a secretive relationship with a child, so much so that they're directing the child, a minor child, to delete their communications so that the parent won't find out. Well, when the parent did find out, they were so understandably freaked out by the creepiness of that not only did they take their child out of the school district, but they moved back to the country they came from, the country they immigrated from. They came to America for a better life, and then they came to Washington and realized, well, that's crazy. Our kids aren't safe here. So they went back to the country they immigrated from. That's how bad these policies have been. That's why parents pushed for a parental bill of rights, which became law today, in which the superintendent of public instruction is now saying he will not abide by. He's saying, well, we need to let this run its course. You know, there's still the existing ACLU lawsuit. The judge didn't block the law, you know, on an emergency basis from taking effect, but the lawsuit will proceed forward. And so I don't know. He's hoping that he's going to get more clarification from that. So you're just not going to follow the law blatantly as a public official. You're not going to follow the law until the court case is done. Can he do that? Can you do that? I don't think he can do that. I don't think you can say, I'm not going to follow this law that took effect legally, lawfully, that voters pushed for, that the legislature approved. I'm not going to follow it until the ACLU is done challenging it. I'm not sure you can do that. That is wild stuff. I do want to note, in case you're interested, Let's Go Washington is having a rally this afternoon in Olympia on the steps of the state capitol if you just want to celebrate this huge achievement. And I called Brian Haywood yesterday and it was like a 5-second conversation. I said, I just want to say congratulations to you. I mean, really, when you look at where he started on this and people saying, well, you can't collect that many signatures, the legislature will never pass any of this. And I was a skeptic too. I thought, no way in hell Democrats are going to sign any of these things. And they did. So today, 4 p.m., steps of the state capitol, if you want to go down there and celebrate the power of the people. All right, coming up next in our segment, Unbelievable. Governor Jay Inslee is going to take his climate grift to the very end. He's going to take it to the very end. And it's not about preserving his legacy. It's about preserving his pocketbook. And it's about making sure that the Climate Commitment Act stays in effect so he can use it to pull in, I don't know, a seven-figure salary when he leaves the governor's mansion. We'll have that coming up. First, I've encouraged you guys to take the First Mark Challenge. If your budgets are tight under the weight of all these taxes and cost of gasoline, you might not be able to, you know, you might have looked at your budget and said, I can't really get rid of anything, but could you save money on your insurance? Well, First Mark Insurance will tell you. What the First Mark Challenge entails is just scheduling some time. You could do it virtually over the phone with First Mark to talk about your current insurance, your insurance needs. They go out for free, they shop their carriers for you, and they come back with recommendations. Our friend Ben Bailey and his wife Leslie took the First Mark Challenge, and it saved them $1,500 a year.
I mean, you know, more than anything, it was really kind of drilling down and looking at the current coverages that we have today, and if those were adequate for, you know, say if we had a major incident here at the house, you know, were our cars covered adequately, or were they actually, in our case, over covered? Right, we have one car that's fairly new, and another one that's a few years old, and the one that was a few years old actually has had too much coverage on it. So that helped as well.
Yeah, so there's really nothing to lose by taking the First Mark Challenge. It just costs you a little bit of time. There's no obligation, and you never pay First Mark anything for their services, and they could save you money. So firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you, not the insurance company, so they are going to have your best interests in mind. Is there a bigger liar than Jay Inslee? Is there a bigger liar than Jay Inslee? I have a segment today where I want to take you through, point by point, the absolute fear-mongering, lying, manipulation that Governor Jay Inslee is engaged in to try to keep his precious Climate Commitment Act. Let's discuss it in our segment, Unbelievable. Ooh. So what is the fundamental reason I'm opposed to the Climate Commitment Act? What is the fundamental reason that I've talked about? The people who pushed for it can't tell the truth about it. I don't care if it is good climate policy, which it's not. But even if it were, if the politicians who pushed for it and who passed it are incapable of telling the truth about it and are incapable of being honest with the people they're supposed to serve about the financial impact it will have on their families, if you cannot do that, then you do not deserve to keep it. If you cannot deserve that, do that, then it cannot be good policy. So the fundamental reason I support the initiative repealing the CCA is Governor Inslee is a liar. Here are the receipts.
At what point are you going to tell the people of Washington State that they're going to possibly see much higher gas prices next year because of the CO2 emissions tax?
That's not true. They are not going to see much higher gas prices, maybe even lower than they are today.
The lie detector test determined that was a lie.
This is going to have minimal impact, if any, pennies. We're talking about pennies, potentially. Not all of this would be passed off to the consumers.
The lie detector test determined that was a lie.
Yeah, and those are not the only lies that Governor Inslee has told. His lies are extending into the initiative into the effort to defeat Initiative 2117, which he is helping to lead the charge on. And make no mistake, it isn't about the Climate Commitment Act. It isn't about making sure that this wonderful climate policy that's absolutely going to help the planet remains intact. No, this is selfishness from him. This is about protecting his legacy, and it's about protecting the money that he's going to make by folding himself into the climate industrial complex after he leaves office in 2025. So this is the No on 2117 campaign. This is how they brand it. We can't afford it. I'm not kidding. They have the audacity to tell you that we have to keep the CCA because we can't afford it if we get rid of it. It says, protect our air and water, forests and farmland, jobs and transportation investments. Vote no on Initiative 2117. We can't afford it. Let me fix that for them and tell you what they really mean by that. When they say protect our air and water, forests and farmland, jobs and transportation improvements, what they really mean is protect Jay Inslee's legacy. When they say we can't afford it, what they really mean is Jay can't afford it. Because if you get rid of his climate policy that he holds so near and dear as the climate governor and the climate presidential candidate, if you get rid of that, if you strip him of that legacy, well, maybe it's not as easy as for him to find a job in the climate sector that was created, a job that exists because of climate policy that he pushed through. So that's really what they mean. But let's get deeper into the dishonesty, shall we? And remember, it's all self-serving. This is a fundraising email that was sent out for the No on 2117 campaign. Hi, it's Governor Inslee. Have you seen who's funding Initiative 2117, the initiative to allow more pollution in Washington? See for yourself. It's a clown car of far-right, anti-climate millionaires. This race comes down to right-wing millionaires versus everyday Washingtonians. And in it, he includes this picture of the top five contributors to Let's Go Washington, which, of course, is behind all of the initiatives. Brian Haywood, a wealth manager, Phil Scott, Steve Gordon, which they call a right-wing donor and full-time conservative Twitter troll.
I also like Brian's mullet.
Yeah. Well, he just got his hair slicked back. Yeah. Multimillionaire hedge fund owner for Brian Haywood. Wealth manager who works with ultra-affluent clients, Phil Scott. And then they have this guy named Peter Plath, and no picture. It says mystery man. It's like, is he he's a mystery man just because you don't have a picture of him? And then they have Kemper Freeman with a bandana, which if you've ever met Kemper Freeman, although Kemper Freedom would be a cool name, who's like responsible for all the growth in Bellevue. Developer and former Republican representative who really, really hates public transit. But I just love that they use this picture of him where he's like laughing and has a bandana on. If you've ever seen him, he's a very quiet, you know, humble guy, and I've never seen him wearing a bandana like that, so I'm not sure where they got that picture from. But again, keep in mind what they're pushing there. This race comes down to right-wing millionaires versus everyday Washingtonians. So what they're painting this as is rich people are trying to get rid of the Climate Commitment Act, and everyday Washingtonians are trying to keep it. Let's see if the fundraising numbers bear that out. Shall we? Okay. So right now, yes on 2117. So that's the position I take. I think that's the position a lot of you take. Yes on 2117. Yes on repealing the CCA has raised $1.2 million. And there's, I put an asterisk next to that because that's not specifically to support 2117. That's to support all six initiatives. So there's one pool of money to support all six initiatives. And it has raised $1.2 million. Contrast that with the No on 2117 campaign, which is its own committee. They have raised more than $5 million just to oppose the repeal of the Climate Commitment Act. Interesting. That's so strange because we were led to believe by Jay Inslee in that fundraising email that it's right-wing millionaires and they're just throwing all sorts of money at this, but they're being outspent 5-1. Okay, all right. Well, maybe that's fine, right? Maybe that's fine. Maybe it's regular Washingtonians who are donating, you know, a lot in small figures. Maybe it's just a lot of Washingtonians who are throwing $10, $100 to try to keep this wonderful climate policy. And maybe that's why they've raised more than $5 million. That could be, right? Yeah. Let's take a look, shall we, at the contributors? Top four contributors for each. All right, so yes on 2117 to repeal the Climate Commitment Act. Let's see, Kemper Holdings donated $100,000, George Rowley $100,000, George Petrie $100,000, Steve Gordon $50,000. Okay, those are substantial amounts of money. Yeah, so maybe those are right-wing millionaires just trying to ruin the environment for everyone. Let's go look at the top four donors on the No on 2117, which of course is just regular Washingtonians, right? Regular Washingtonians trying to protect the environment. Let's see, Chris Stolte, $1 million. Bill Gates, $1 million. Sarah Murner, $500,000. Craig McKibben, $500,000. So when it comes to the amounts that rich people are donating for the Yes on 2117 and No on 2117 campaigns, there is no comparison. Jay Inslee is painting the initiative to repeal the CCA as funded by right-wing, dangerous millionaires who are pushing a bunch of money at it. Meanwhile, he's got Bill Gates outspending them 10 to 1 by donating $1 million. Chris Stolte outspending them 10 to 1 by donating $1 million. But, oh, that money good? Liberal rich people, good. Conservative rich people, bad, evil. And again, let me remind you, let's just revisit the fundraising email that Governor Inslee sent out. Hi, it's Governor Inslee. Have you seen who's funding Initiative 2117, the initiative to allow more pollution in Washington? See for yourself. It's a clown car of far-right anti-climate millionaires. This race comes down to right-wing millionaires versus everyday Washingtonians. And that really struck me because I seem to remember that almost 500,000 regular Washingtonians signed Initiative 2117. Oh, that's right, yes. 472,000 regular Washingtonians signed Initiative 2117 to get it on the ballot in November. You know how many regular Washingtonians have donated to the campaign to try to stop it? 194, including Bill Gates. So tell me again, Jay Inslee, how this comes down to right-wing millionaires who hate the climate versus everyday Washingtonians. He is taking his climate grift to the very end because he's worried about his legacy. He's worried about his own paycheck after he leaves office. It has nothing to do with whether the CCA is actually good policy. Unbelievable. All right, I've told you guys if you're going to sell your home in 2024 to reach out to our friend Wes Jones of sellwithwes.com. Wes has been doing this for a really long time. He knows the market like the back of his hand. When our friends Bryce and Carla, who are fans of the show, decided to sell their home in Bellevue and move to Florida, they reached out to Wes Jones. And despite the fact they sold in January, interest rates were terrible, Wes had a plan.
He was extraordinarily detailed, and he knew our neighborhood and our properties in the neighborhood very well. He gave us a really great comp plan, showed us what other properties were selling for. And most importantly, he helped us to understand the dangers of overpricing. And we thought what we knew we could get for the property, but we didn't, you know, at the same time, he breathed an air of reality into us, said, look, guys, you want to get that out of the property, you're going to need to start at a certain point, and you're going to let the market come to you. And that's exactly what happened. He was exactly right about that. So his knowledge of the market and his professionalism and his attention to detail is all that made the difference to us.
Yeah, so they were worried about selling their home at this with the market the way it was, but thanks to Wes Jones, they sold their home in 7 days over list price. They're now enjoying sunny Florida. So good for them. If you want to sell your home and you maybe have some of the same concerns Bryce and Carla had, reach out to Wes Jones, sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. Start by using their home value calculator to see how much your home is worth. It might be worth more than you think. Sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. All right, let's dip outside of Washington State. We'll just dip our toe out because we're just going down to Oregon, where apparently it is perfectly legal for an adult to expose themselves to a toddler that's not theirs and nothing will happen to them. So there's a dad in Oregon who's out there. I don't know if it was a lemonade stand or something. Kids in their front yard, right? Naked man approaches their child. What does the dad do? He calls the cops, right? I would probably beat the hell out of him, and then I'd have Mike beat the hell out of him. I don't want to touch the naked guy. And then I'd call the cops. So here is the dad's video that he posted of what happened after police arrived.
You're saying in the state of Oregon, mm-hmm. someone can walk up to your two-year-old kid completely bare naked, and that's not a crime? Even if it's on your property.
Correct. Well, so it's trespassing, but what I'm saying is there's no laws against the actual nudity portion of it.
So you can expose yourself to children in Oregon.
Again, if you're not doing it for sexual gratification or the gratification of somebody else, yes, you are allowed to walk around in public naked.
On private property, this is where I live, and someone just came and exposed themselves to my two-year-old boy. And right. This officer's saying that it's not a crime. So a naked person came up onto my property here, approached my two-year-old kid completely naked, which I ran over to him and covered his eyes so he wouldn't see. My obvious thought is to call 911 as someone's indecently exposing themselves to my child on my property. At what point did this become a normal and acceptable thing to do? The cops will literally do nothing about it. They're basically saying we have to wait for that person to do something more serious to your kid before we can intervene.
What reason would there be for approaching a toddler naked if it wasn't for your sexual gratification? What am
just
I missing?
You like to run around nude, what, I guess.
What do you get out of running around nude if you're not doing right. it like for your sexual gratification?
They don't want tan lines.
Nicole's like, I can think of a lot of reasons. I do it all the time. It's crazy. That's insane. And that's one of the issues I have with some of these Seattle parades, like Pride Parade and Solstice, where they're one of my first experiences in Seattle, Pride Parade in downtown. And like, I make my way to the front of the thing, and I was fairly new to Seattle. I think I'd been here for just a couple months. Downtown, like, what's going on? Oh, Pride, must be that, you know, from the Midwest. So I don't really, you know, Pride here was much different. I'd never been to a Pride Parade. Penis and balls.
Mm-hmm.
One of the first things I saw. Completely bare. And I'm like, and I'm an adult, right? And then there's kids there, and then there's BDSM and ball gags. And I'm like, how is this legal?
Uh-huh.
How can you be naked and nude out there? Because, yes, I guess you get to decide, am I going to go to the parade? But then parents are bringing their kids. And then summer solstice, where it's the naked bike riders. So I went to that one year, and, you know, it's a lot of them do body paint. Mm-hmm. So they're naked, but they've got their whole bodies painted. So I'm there, and this guy's on a bike with a, I hate being so vulgar, he's aroused.
Yeah.
So most of them, you know, they're you can't really see because their sort of bits are in the seat and stuff.
Right.
This guy is full on aroused, riding his bike around. There's kids who are riding their bikes, you know, being pulled in wagons. Like, I'm all for parental rights, obviously, but that's disgusting. And it's disgusting. I would never suggest bringing your child to somewhere where there's going to be a bunch of naked adults. Why would you do that? I don't get that. Mm-mm. But when your child is in your own yard, and a naked adult approaches them, that's not against the law? That is absolutely insane. All right, so we went to Oregon. Let's just go down, boop, to California, shall we? We'll just hit the whole crazy West Coast. All right, UCLA med school, 50% of their students are failing standardized tests. Not the kind of students that you want failing tests. The ones who are trying to be doctors. Now, why is this? Well, it's because as a country, we have done away with meritocracy, and we reward people based on immutable characteristics like their skin tone that they have absolutely no control over and that don't determine anything about how quality they would be as a doctor. So this is from Campus Reform. UCLA med students alarmingly substandard as school cuts corners and admits applicants based on race. The University of California, Los Angeles, David Geffen Medical School, has been heavily prioritizing race in admissions while the school has fallen in rankings. According to the Washington Free Beacon, when a black candidate in November of 2021 applied with test scores and grades well below the average for UCLA, the admissions committee expressed skepticism and argued the candidate wasn't a good fit. But the dean of admissions, Jennifer Lucero, chided the committee, quote, "Did you not know African-American women are dying at higher rates than everybody else?" she said. She argued that low grades and test scores shouldn't matter too much, adding, quote, "We need people like this in the medical school." Interesting. So one official wrote in an email to another committee member that the Free Beacon got its hands on, "We are not consistent in the way we apply the metrics to these applicants. I wondered if this applicant had been a white male or an Asian female, for that matter, would we have had that much discussion?" Several university officials spoke with the outlet and said Lucero, quote, "cut corners to achieve racial diversity." Quote, "I have students on their rotation who don't know anything," one admissions committee member said. "People get in and they struggle." Another UCLA faculty member said, quote, "I wouldn't normally talk to a reporter, but there's no way to stop this without embarrassing the medical school." And look, the medical school is embarrassing itself. There was a professor who described one incident in an operating room during which a student could not identify a major artery when they were asked. The professor says the student proceeded to become angry and yell at the professor, saying that she had been put on the spot. The professor said, quote, "I don't know how some of these students are going to be junior doctors. Faculty are seeing a shocking decline in knowledge of medical students." And it's not just these stories that professors are sharing. This is true in the numbers as well. It says the changes in admissions have had a dramatic impact on the medical school's overall rankings. Since Lucero was hired in 2020, UCLA has dropped in the U.S. News and World Report's rankings for medical research from 6th to 18th. Additionally, over 50% of its students failed standardized tests on family medicine, internal medicine, emergency medicine, and pediatrics. According to the report, those tests are normally taken at the end of clinical rotations and are important in applications to residencies. The average fail rate for those tests is 5% nationally. 5% nationally, 50% at UCLA. At UCLA, since 2020, fail rates have increased tenfold in several subjects, according to data obtained by the Free Beacon. Let me ask you this. Do you want to have a doctor who graduated from a school where there's a 50% fail rate on standardized tests for family medicine, internal medicine, emergency medicine, and pediatrics? If you bring your child to the emergency room for a life or death situation, do you care at all what the skin color of the doctor is? No. There is no reason in the world, particularly when it comes to med school, why characteristics such as race and gender and sexual orientation should be factored in whatsoever in admissions. And UCLA is proof of that. All right, it is Thursday, so it is time to check in on my sister and see what's happening in the Sunshine State. It is our segment, Florida Report.
It's not even controversial anymore. People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Miranda, I thought of you the other day for a weird reason. I mean, I think of you every day because I love you. However, Nicole and I went to Met Market and I got one of their gigantic chocolate chip cookies. I had so much guilt, but look, it's fine. I'm on the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic maintenance program, but you love a chocolate cookie. It's like
Absolutely.
Your obsession. So I thought of you while I was eating it.
It's a problem. I hope that when everybody's eating a delicious chocolate chip cookie, they think of me.
Nicole was looking at me like, wow, you're really going to eat that whole thing. I gave her a little piece. It was like these cookies. They call it like the cookie, right? The one cookie. I don't know, whatever it is, Met Market. They're huge. And it's just like a bloodbath of chocolate in the middle, and it was worth it, and then I didn't feel good later. But anyway, I digress. All right, you have a story there today that's kind of relevant to what's happening here. We discussed via voter initiative restored reasonable police pursuits. It takes effect here in Florida. Of course, they never got rid of police pursuits, and now they're saying, the sheriff of one county is saying, that if you run from us, we will seek you out and impound your vehicle.
Yeah, and Florida did, like this county in particular did back in 2014, try to narrow down the reasons for pursuit just to keep the roads safe. Because, of course, like it has to be within reason,
right.
But they never completely got rid of it. And it narrowed down, like those rules narrowed it from like thousands of pursuits a year down to like 10. But that doesn't mean people still aren't just taken off during traffic stops. So this sheriff is sick of it, and he thinks it's an epidemic across the country, not just his county. And he basically said, starting June 11th, if you do not stop when you are directed to stop by one of their deputies, they're just going to seize your car and impound it and sell it at auction.
Oh, I love that so much. Get them where it hurts, because, I mean, that makes a difference if it's not a stolen vehicle. A lot of our police pursuits have been stolen vehicles. They don't care if you track it down. It's not going to be tracked down to them, right? So,
yeah.
But if it's someone, we see this with motorcyclists. There have been a couple stories lately. I think there was a motorcyclist here going 121 miles an hour, and you can't keep up with that, but they tracked him via air support, stops and gets gas, and then they came in and arrest him. That's somebody who should be taken away from them. They shouldn't ever be able to be on a motorcycle again, and their motorcycle should be sold at auction. I'm a big fan of that. I think that's a great
Absolutely.
Idea.
And there are some, like, you know, obviously some stipulations, because you know, say it's not your car. I mean, if you've reported your car stolen, then they're obviously not going to impound your stolen vehicle. But, you know, if it's maybe your friend borrowed your car for a joyride, like they're going to track it back. If you weren't the one driving it, you're able to prove that. You get one warning. On the second one, if you just keep borrowing your car to dumb people, you are going to be penalized in the same way. They're super sick of it. So that's actually really doesn't bother me, because if you stop, you have no risk of getting your car taken away. So. Yeah,
100%. So that's more getting out in those like people who are reliving Fast and the Furious types and stuff, mm-hmm. and those souped up cars. And oh, take more of those off the roads. There is nothing... There are few things that bother me more than the people in the souped up cars with the loud tailpipes who like pass somewhere. I'm like, do you think that's sexy? Is this supposed to turn me on? What is it? Because I just want to kick you right in the throat. It's so bad. I know you have a friend who has cars like that. It's a female. And we were in it one time and I was just sitting there like, this is really loud.
Well, actually, you know, what's really funny is she's on our way over so we can do work together this afternoon. And I was like, I hope she doesn't pull up while I'm recording this, because y'all are going to hear her. She's going to love that we mentioned her.
It's nice because you'll just hear her from a mile away like, oh, she's on her way. So bad. Okay, so you have another thing there involving HOAs. Now, I might have some points of disagreement on there. So in Florida, they're trying to combat just, I guess, power-hungry HOA Karens who want to fine homeowners for every little thing.
Yeah, this is a combination of power-hungry homeowners in addition to money-hungry associations, because sure. The biggest problem I think we have here isn't like always the rules that are being imposed, but it's the fines. They'll hit you with a $400 fine without warning mm-hmm. for leaving your trash can on the curb for 26 hours after trash pickup, you mm-hmm. know? So this law basically kind of prevents them from being able to hit you with these huge fines for such small things without warnings. And some of those things are, like I said, having your trash cans on the curb for 24 hours before or after. They can't fine you within those time frames. So I kind of get that, because sometimes I know I'm going to forget, but I remember the day before, so I'll just put my trash can out there. Yeah. But some of the other ones are like, you can't park your pick. Like some homeowners won't even let you have a pickup truck within the association, whether it's a daily driver or a work truck. So this law kind of gets rid of that ability for them to fine you for having a pickup truck or any sort of work vehicle that's like non-commercial. It's also another one is allowing first responders who live within an association to have their first responder vehicles parked on the curb or the right of way so that they can get in and out quickly if they need to.
Oh, great. Yeah, I like that in our HOA, we have a couple first responder vehicles and they park in good places to deter crime a little bit. And it's like, love that. You know, you park at the front of the neighborhood if you want to. That would be great. Yeah, I mean, there are HOA rules for a reason, and sometimes people do need them. I'll say Mike and I's HOA is great. I mean, the annual due is really, really reasonable. And they're pretty lenient. I mean, right now, I kind of told Mike, so we haven't mowed the lawn in a little bit, and it's getting a little bit egregious. And we have a Dave Reichert lawn sign. And I told Mike, if we don't mow the lawn today, we have to take that lawn sign out. Because right now, we're doing him dirty. Because we look like white trash. And nobody said anything. Nobody's complained about our lawn. But, you know, Mike's like, I'm going to get to that today. So, reasonable stuff. But I do think HOAs can also be weaponized. You know, if there's some power-hungry person on the HOA who doesn't like someone in the neighborhood, and they can just try to, you know, do all sorts of things to them. But anyway, that's very interesting. All right, Miranda, thank you so much.
Have a great weekend.
It's not even controversial anymore. People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
I think I need to update like the Trump quote in there to be something, I don't know, that he said after his trial or something. I like that one though. Not even controversial anymore. I also need to add Miranda's picture of her with the alligator. So many things to do. All right. Also, every Thursday on the show, we try to help you get a better grasp on what's happening with the economy with our friend Zach Abraham with Bulwark Capital. One of the things he talks a lot about is trying to avoid some of these stocks that are just popular basically because of social media or they've just gone gangbusters. One of them is NVIDIA, which makes AI chips. They just hit the $3 trillion market cap. So they're one of only three companies ever to do that. But still, Zach Abraham says you need to be cautious. Zach Abraham, welcome back to Undivided.
Thanks for having me back again.
NVIDIA. So interesting, you know, you're all like, people are just obsessed with NVIDIA, terrible idea. It's up 3,224% over the past 5 years. It just surpassed the $3 trillion market cap. So do you change your, do you have nicer things to say about NVIDIA now or not so much?
So I've always said that I think that they've got great products. I think that they've got great management. I think they're a great company. The issue that I have with it is the same I had with it last time, which is just valuation. And let me just explain what I mean. They've got great chips, okay? But if we look at 60% of their chip purchases come from the other big tech companies, 60%, okay? Google already has almost a viable alternative. They've got a chip that is just as fast, but is also more energy efficient and runs at a cooler temperature. And that's good for about 25 to 30% of AI applications. Apple's already developed the M chips. They're working on an AI chip. Amazon is as well. Microsoft is as well. So you're talking about a $3 trillion company that is trading at 45 times revenue, not earnings, revenue. Right. So I've never seen anything this expensive. It's not a fly by night thing or me saying that I think they're doing anything dodgy. Nothing like that. It's purely a valuation, meaning when a stock gets this expensive, what you're doing by de facto is you're extrapolating out growth rates into, you know, 8 to 10 years down the road. And if the investment thesis is that these giant tech companies who currently have significantly more money than NVIDIA, if the thesis is these companies that are trying to swallow the world are just going to sit back and let NVIDIA, that they're going to feather NVIDIA's nest for them, come on. But there's one company involved in the mix that really is the one that can do nothing or that can do things that nobody else can do. And NVIDIA relies on them as well, and it's Taiwan Semiconductor. So everybody was looking at NVIDIA up 5% today. Taiwan Semiconductor was up almost 7%. And Taiwan Semiconductor trades for a fraction of the price. And NVIDIA can't make their chips without Taiwan Semiconductor. So it's nothing against NVIDIA at all. I wish I would have bought it. It's kind of an embarrassing story. So I have a wish list of stocks and it helps keep me honest. So like I'll sit there and say, okay, if this stock reaches this price, I'll buy it no matter what. NVIDIA was on that list and I didn't pull the trigger when it dropped to 125. Oh. So I botched that. That's on me. But where I'm looking at it today is if I would have bought it back then, I guarantee I would have taken some profits. And if you did and you bought it, great win. Take some profits. Like my grandfather said, you can't go broke taking profits. But I just, when I look at the AI space today, there's just some other very essential companies that are trading at a fraction of the valuation. And you know, Taiwan Semiconductor to me is a perfect example. If you believe the growth story for NVIDIA is going to play out and their revenue is going to 10X from here, guess who their biggest customer, guess who Taiwan Semiconductor's biggest customer is?
Yeah,
NVIDIA. It's NVIDIA. Right? So again, I nothing against NVIDIA. Wished I would have bought it. I'm not going to sit here and try to play like I did and I'm all knowing or anything like that. Perfect example. The market cap, the total value of the company, according to the market, went up by 150 or 160 billion today. Okay. That is almost 2.5 times their annual revenue today. Wow. On no news.
Wow.
Right. So it's not like they announced some new product that's going to increase revenue. It's just, you're getting to a point where you're just sitting there going, look, maybe it's a decent price. Maybe it's not. It's just so far out there that I can't see 8 years into the future. So, it just seems like a crazy buy to me.
Yeah. So NVIDIA, take it or leave it. But he's saying it seems a little bit nuts to do it when it's going like this. So Zach Abraham and his team at Bulwark Capital, they specialize in managing your risk on your retirement portfolio. I mean, you only get one retirement. You do not want to risk it. You also need to make sure that you're planning to deal with inflation. Zach can help you with that, too. So schedule a free risk review now at knowyourriskradio.com. That's knowyourriskradio.com. Investment advisory services offered through Trek Financial, LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. Investments involve risk and are not guaranteed past performance. performance does not guarantee future results. Trek 24244, go to knowyourriskradio.com. All right, let's get to our daily subscriber show poll. I asked you guys about the initiatives that took effect today. I asked three voter initiatives that became law today. Of them, which do you think will have the biggest positive impact? Police pursuits, no state income tax, or parental rights? Nicole, what's yours? What do you think? What is going to have the biggest positive impact of the three of those?
Positive?
Yeah.
I think police pursuits.
Yeah, that seems to be the consensus. Well, there's a little bit of a disagreement, but most people saying police pursuits. Dave Keller says, proper parenting staves off virtually every societal problem. It's not a quick fix, but enthroning and supporting parents to raise good children will change the world more than almost anything. I think that's a very sound argument for parental rights. Amelia says, I think the police pursuits will have the biggest effect on crime, but I chose parental rights because it sends the loudest message that the woke BS is hurting everyone and people are tired of it. Nancy Campbell, all three, but income tax will bury all of us. Once they get that, it's over for Washington. Harold, I chose police pursuits primarily because I believe the EATS. Why can I not speak today?
I don't know.
I'm like tripping up on all my words. Harold says, I chose police pursuits primarily because I believe the elites in Olympia will quickly circumvent the others. Yeah, that's very true. But we'll see, the thing with police pursuits, it gives agencies the option. So it's not going to look the same across the entire state, but I do believe it's going to have a significant impact on public safety. Let's see what's happening over on X and Locals. Winton, I know police pursuits were, but a lot of agencies such as Tacoma PD had no pursuit policies before the state law stopped pursuits and probably would continue to keep it that way. Curious to see how many departments that stopped chasing will start back up. I mean, most of Eastern Washington, right? And a lot of, we just heard from Pierce County, Thurston County. So those are two big counties. I do believe that the majority of counties will revert closer to the old way of doing things. All right, getting to some questions and comments. Ron Dog, $9.99 Super Chat. Thank you, Brandy Cruz. Your work is valuable. That's so nice. It's just nice to hear that our work is valued, even though I can't speak properly today. Bill Biz with a $20 Super Chat. I still get a kick out of the pursuit suspect calling 911 to complain while being pursued. Typical Seattle. That's classic. Unbelievable. Yeah. Teresa Jean on the Met Market cookie. The cookie is the best chocolate chip cookie. It was so good. It was a delicious lot of sugar. It had to have been like 700 calories.
Oh, I think probably just the bite that I had was 700 calories.
It was delicious.
But it was worth
it. But Met Market is on our S list.
Hashtag.
As you'll find out.
I know.
On Sundays with Subscribers this week. We have a story with a woman who basically was forced to resign from Met Market because she commented on a woman's necklace. And the necklace, the woman took it very politically. So we have a wild story about Met Market. So this may be the last time I buy one of those cookies from Met Market. More on Sundays with Subscribers.
It will make you, I don't think anybody that
it's
watches
infuriating.
This will understand why this woman had to resign.
But. No, we're living in this world where things that, like all these microaggressions, like they're blown out of proportion. Where back in the day, we're just like, oh, no worries. Like, yeah, I know you didn't mean that.
Misunderstanding.
Misunderstanding. No misunderstanding.
That's racist. Not allowed.
Racist, sexist, whatever it is.
Anti-Semitic.
Anti-Semitic. Anti-Islamophobic.
Yeah.
No, Islamophobic, not anti-Islamophobic. All right. B. Larson on Reichdahl saying that they're not going to follow the parental rights initiative when it comes to gender identity and protecting kids' gender identity from their mean, evil parents. B. Larson says, no matter the issue with a child, schools should be required to go directly to the parents who are responsible for anything the child does. Are there crappy parents? Absolutely. But that's life. And that's the exception, not the rule. You can't create laws and policies designed for the worst possible outcomes, right? It's like, no, most parents are good and can be trusted with this information. And if a parent's abusing their child physically, there's a law for that. So it's ridiculous. Lieutenant Dan, parents should know to get their kids the much needed support they need. Not knowing leaves parents in the dark to not make the best decisions for the health and well-being of their kids. And how many times has the left told us, like, the mental health issues involved with being trans? So you're going to have a kid who thinks they're trans. By your own admission, they're more susceptible to suicide, to suicidal ideation, to mental health problems, and you're going to keep their parents in the dark, and you think that that's helpful? Get a grip.
I don't understand. They never consider. So you're saying, okay, trans kids don't have parents or whoever doesn't support them, so they're, you know, at risk for depression, suicide, whatever.
Yeah.
What about the kids that have the same problems from the opposite effects, right? So, you know, you're forced to hide this and be two different persons all over the place.
Right.
That is damaging, and that will create a suicidal effect.
That's what I'm saying.
And then parents can't, you know, help with that. And then kids who are losing to transgender kids in sports that become depressed because they can never win.
Yep.
And they're dealing with mental illnesses and may, and I mean, hopefully not suicidal. Hopefully they have parents that support them and know that that's not necessary, but I mean, put down the social media.
Right.
But I just think that it's so bizarre. We only focus, like, their discussion, their arguments are only focused on this one aspect or this one kid.
Pro-trans.
It's one kid. Mm-hmm. It's one, this one kid that has this, could have this effect. But why don't we just support those kids with the right resources, and then we'll take care of that and not damage everyone else while we do it.
Yeah, like that Seattle Times article on the trans runner who won the state championship. It was all about like, oh, you know, you can't say anything because we feel bad for them. No interest in the perspective of the girls who lose, you know, or the parents who watch their kids lose and try to try to convince them it's not their fault. Just crazy stuff.
It's wild.
A good point.
Sanity. Where are people? I don't get it.
They're right here, Nicole. They're watching right now as we speak.
I know.
On Governor Inslee's deeply dishonest push for fundraising to oppose Initiative 2117, Nightwolf says, "Gotta love the rich. They can live any life they imagine, yet they choose to use their wealth to perpetrate evil upon the world." Think about that, though. And I said this on the show before when Bill Gates donated $1 million to keep the CCA. Bill Gates spent one of the richest men in the world, spent $1 million of his own money despite knowing that the policy he's supporting is hurting the working class and that people can't afford gas and groceries. That's evil. That's evil stuff. And meanwhile, he jet sets around the world. So is this $1 million to clear his conscience for all the carbon he's putting out into our planet? I want a reporter to ask Jay Inslee, do you believe that you have a bigger carbon footprint than the average Washingtonian? I want them to ask Jay Inslee that. Do you believe, Governor Inslee, that you have a bigger carbon footprint than your average constituent? Because he can't say no.
I say, will you acknowledge that?
Yeah.
Is what I would
say. Yeah. You can't say no because you are flying everywhere all over the place all the time. Mm-hmm. So the climate governor would have to acknowledge, well, yes, I have a much bigger, well, he's a liar, so he probably wouldn't, but he'd probably say, oh, no, we do all these things to offset all my jet setting to Davos. Give me a freaking break. All right, one more. Kenneth Rauch on UCLA. DEI hires and admissions are going to cost Americans lives. A sad day for all of us. I'm not sorry, but in some careers, they should be about meritocracy and the best of the best. Every career, unless it's the head of the NCAA or NAACP. NCAA. We're really struggling today.
NAACP.
There is no job except if it's like specific to
NAACP.
Yeah, but she had to pretend she was black. NAACP. That's the only time where skin color should matter. Every other job ought to be, and every other admissions into any other school should be about meritocracy. With that, let's get to our closing sanity check, shall we? As so many cities and counties are proudly raising the pride flag on this Pride Month, there are a few who are standing against it, including the city of Newcastle and Mayor Robert Clark. Here's what he had to say when the city decided it was not going to raise the pride flag above City Hall.
So if we start raising flags, we got to raise everybody. How, we want a Hamas flag flying over, you know, the city of Newcastle, or MAGA flag? How about a Trump flag or a you know, an Antifa flag? We're not going there, folks. Not while I'm the mayor. I'm sorry. So this is already an inclusive city with an inclusive flag that flies 24/7 over our city. We include everybody. We're not going to exclude somebody, and we're not going to say, well, this group is better than that group, so they get a flag or they get a day. Everybody is equally represented by the American flag every single day.
He says, most unifying symbol in the history of the world, the American flag. I love it. That has been your sanity check for today. That has been today's episode of Undivided. We've got a great episode of Sundays with Subscribers coming up for you. This Sunday, if you have not subscribed already, you can do so for just $5 a month at undividedpod.com. Undividedpod.com. We've already got a ton of great content that we're gearing up for next week. And hey, who knows? By Monday, maybe I'll be able to speak again. It's possible. Who knows? You guys have a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful weekend.